Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Laverne Council, the Assistant Secretary for the Office of Information and Technology and Chief Information Officer at the Veterans Affairs Department. Laverne, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hi, Jason. Thank you for having me.
Well, I know that we've been trying to get this done now for a little while, so I really appreciate the time. You've been CIO for about six, almost 7 months, transition from the private sector. This is in many ways your first, quote unquote, government job. Talk to me about the transition. What surprised you? What's been the biggest learning curve?
Yeah, as a presidential actually appointee, this has been really interesting. This is my first foray after 30 years of private industry experience working in the U.S. government, and in particular working for a mission-driven organization like Veteran Affairs, being brought in really to turn the ship, as they say. So it has been eye-opening as a U.S. citizen and as a purveyor of support for the veterans that the way that we get things done is very different. But I would also say that the opportunities are great, and it's been very fulfilling to make the difference. But it is a real different world between private industry and the public domain. And IT still has a great deal of opportunity, but how we deliver it, what we deliver, when we deliver, the pace in which we deliver is very different. And so it's been good. It's been good, but also a learning curve.
It's interesting you talk about pace a little bit, because I think that's when I've talked to people in the past who've come from the private sector into government, especially in a role such as yours, a high executive position, the pace is what's the most frustrating thing, is that they have to get used to the fact that in government, you can't necessarily just go out and be like, I'm going to do that. I'm going to buy this and get on this type of technology. Mm-hmm. Has that been the biggest learning curve for you, is to understand that pace issue?
Yes, the pace is very different. I do believe, though, that sometimes people don't believe that in the competitive nature of procurement and strategic sourcing, a private industry can just do those things. Actually, you can't. You have to go through the same process of understanding who your suppliers are, what the best practice is, what the best competitive structure is, and then implementing it. So many of those things are the same. The difference is the pace to deliver, what the expectation is on delivery, the time cycle to deliver, especially when you're dealing with the stakeholders who can sometimes be the stock market. So it's a quarterly expectation of deliverance. And it's been interesting because what we have to do here in the VA and who we serve requires us that we work a little faster. We have to. I've been real pleased with the response that the team has had to some of the things and some of the solutions that we wanted to put in place, and to the leadership for taking a mantle and sort of running with it. So, for instance, getting our enterprise security strategy in place and defined within, you know, well within 90 days of my arrival was a big, heavy lift in creating those eight domains for security. I think most people thought that couldn't be done, and the team got it done. The same thing with our reengineering of our PMAS process, which was our intake project management process, to now create a very new process called VIP. All of those things were done, including moving us to one release calendar by the end of the year, aligning and creating our new EPMO, defining the key roles that we needed. So in 6 months, we probably got, some people said, equivalent of, I wouldn't say 6 years, but maybe a year and a half worth of work done in 6 months. So the team certainly has the capacity, is willing to take up the mantle, and I'm excited to lead through this process and change. We have a great opportunity.
Now, you jumped ahead on us a little bit. We're going to have to go back and talk about the new PMAS program called VIP, and also talk about the enterprise security. But before I do that, from your perspective, is there anything that surprised you about government? Did you come in with a specific maybe view, and then that was changed, or was something was enhanced by once you got to see the people and understand the mission areas?
It's an interesting question, because one of the things in being a CIO that you're always trying to do is leverage your capital to the max and manage your funds. And so I came in with an idea that there would not be enough funding for different things, that the organization would not have enough of the things that they needed. I have to say that I'm surprised, because we actually do have the things we need. What we have to focus on, though, is being much more effective and efficient with use of it. And I think with our new processes, that's what we're really focused on doing. With our new collaboration capability with our account managers, that's what we're looking forward to really driving. So that was the big surprise. You know, that the dollars and the cost of things are also a big difference. To deliver a similar system in the private industry would cost maybe a tenth of what it costs in public. And it would be done in you know, an eighth of the time, if not less. And so that also was a big driver. I was surprised at how long, especially IT programs, took and how costly they were in comparison with the same things on the private side.
Do you get a sense of why things cost more and take more time in government? Is it just the whole, and this is maybe a bad word, but the bureaucracy of it? And I think that sometimes people use that in a negative connotation, mm-hmm. but I think it's more maybe of there's a lot of, you know, checks and balances that you have to maybe go through in the public sector versus then in the private sector. You can send it to your CFO or your CEO and they're, yeah, that's good, do it. If you think it's good, let's do it. Is that the one big difference, or is there somewhere else?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Once you prove a business case in private industry and the business case is stated, as the lead, then you're moving to that business case, right? You're going after whatever that productivity improvement is, or that profitability improvement is, or that reduction in cost. You know what you're playing for. I think in many cases, what happens because of the budgeting cycle within the government being so far out, that people put placeholders in and they don't know what it's going to cost, and you don't know how much risk is going to have to be taken to get something done. And I think that's probably what draws out the work longer, and also makes it a situation where the supplier has to think about what their risk is in coming in. And so all of that probably adds to the cost component, and well as the timing component. I do believe, however, then that's one of the reasons we're really looking at strategic sourcing as a core value. With clean and clear conceptual strategic sourcing, we can really change that and change our cycle time for delivery as well as our cost of delivery.
When you came to VA, there had been a fair amount of turnover. When you came, people left, which is not untypical. I think a lot of times when new management comes in, things change. You seem to be kind of replacing people, fully staffing up. Give me the status of your office. Do you feel like you're at the place where you need to be in terms of when having the people in place, or is there more people that you're looking to bring in?
As you're aware, we've added five new functions. The EPMO, a data management function, quality and compliance, strategic sourcing, and account management. And the great thing is I now have a new principal, PDAS, new principal deputy, and Ron Thompson, who came from HHS. We brought over Nicole Warhauser from Department of Commerce, and she's working in our EPMO. We have a lead for our EPMO in Rob Thomas. So it is coming together. Our job on the data management side just closed, and the board is looking at those resources. I hope we have some really great people coming forward for that. The strategic sourcing area is the one area, and the quality and compliance area, those will be completed by the end of Q3. So it is coming together. We have some great opportunities, though, some great roles. Our account managers, two of the three have been named. We still have one more to put in place. So it is a bigger lift than I anticipated coming in. As most people know, they tell presidential appointees to pick one or two things, get those things done. I just couldn't do it. When I looked at what the organization needed and the importance of the mission, it was more important that we put a platform for success in place. And that also meant that we had to understand what we needed in leadership and go after it. So it's a heavy lift, but the challenge is worth it.
I know you mentioned the data management job just closed. So you're looking at candidates. Are you thinking of a chief data officer role, or is it like a chief data scientist, or is it just someone, different type of title, but similar role?
Very similar role. For the VA, you know, we have a great opportunity with the EHR information we have, as well as the benefits information we have. For the lifetime of our veteran, we are the engagement partner with them, and better use of that data could really help us enhance the opportunities for them, as well as ensuring that they know what their benefits are, ensuring that our data is solid for them, that they have good access to it, and that they don't have the frustration of telling us something three times, you know, that we have that one record of truth. So this chief data person and chief data management process within the VA is going to be critical, and I'm excited about it.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more. My guest is Laverne Council, the Chief Information Officer of the Veterans Affairs Department. I'm Jason Miller, your host, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Laverne Council, the Chief Information Officer for the Veterans Affairs Department. Now, Laverne, before break, we're talking a little bit about your entry into government and the learning curve and the things that you, your first impressions. Let's just jump into your priorities. The biggest one probably is cybersecurity. You sent a plan to Congress in September. You created a new enterprise cybersecurity team, 8 domains you mentioned. Let's discuss the progress since September, how things are going with cybersecurity.
The ECST team, as we call it, which is the enterprise cybersecurity team, really drove a new strategy for all of OINT. And I think it's really important to understand that in what the team put together, they put together a strategy around 8 key domains, but also included some of the key areas that we often forget about, which include governance, funding, training, how we're going to maintain resources, how we're going to deal with medical cyber, the Internet of Things. And so it is a very broad and engaged set of strategies that we've begun to implement. I'm happy to say that one of our key objectives is to eliminate the material weakness. OINT has been highlighted as a material weakness, you know, by our auditors, and we don't want to be that. And so by having this strategy in place, the leadership and security, and our new CISO is Brian Burns, is leading the organization to complete and eliminate all of the items and all the recommendations that we needed to no longer be a material weakness by the end of 2017. So, you know, having that clean roadmap, a clear understanding of all of the various tasks that go into adjusting such a large enterprise as the VA is critical, and I feel very good that we're now on the right path. But it was a team effort, cross-functional folks from all kinds of capabilities, people that necessarily weren't security folks. And I think the key portion of it that we're most proud of is also our partnering with the external agencies like DHS and DOD and others to really understand how they're best leveraging what NIST is offering, but also how we look at ourselves differently.
That's a big lift to go from material weaknesses. I don't remember how many offhand. It was more than a dozen, if
yes,
I 30. Get it. 30, yeah, to almost more than 2 dozen, to zero by 2017. So I imagine that it's over a two-year period. How do you prioritize them? How do you say, here's the one where we need to really focus today? Because with cybersecurity, as you well know, there's never an end, right? It's a constant improvement.
That was the core value of having the ECS team be made up of people who were from various areas within the entirety of OINT. And so they were able to, working together, set the priority of how we're going to get at certain ones of these recommendations and decide what should come first, second, and third, and what were the codependencies. I know for them in doing that, that was about a 3 to 4 month effort because you got to get it right, you know, and everything has to drop in the right order because if you do something first, you could be redoing it because you did it too early. But in the case of cyber in particular, you're always in a cycle of continuous assessment, always looking for what you need to change, always saying, that was a great idea yesterday, but knowing what I know today, I'm going to do something different tomorrow. And so what we really did was build that kind of process, that it was ever looking at itself, ever questioning itself, leveraging risk management smartly, and assessing ourselves as we go to make sure that just because we thought that was the case in December of 2015, it might no longer be the case in December 2016. And so we built that into the process.
I know it's only been a short amount of time, but are you seeing progress? Do you feel like veterans can be at least more comfortable with how VA is protecting their data? Because I know that this has been an issue that's been ongoing for several years. Mm-hmm. And I think there was obviously a growing frustration on Capitol Hill about it. And I know you've done your best to kind of talk to them and keep them involved. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like there is progress? And if so, can you talk maybe broadly where?
I do feel like there's great progress. One, just having a roadmap is a big, big lift so everyone can understand what we're playing for. Also, you know, elevated privileges and the use of two-factor authentication is a key factor with keeping any bad person from getting access to things. And I'm real proud to say that the team has definitely cleaned up the elevated privileges issue in a big way. And also, as we've thought about our support of the data and how we're looking at the data, the key part of how the data management function will work really relies on a secure environment for that data and how we leverage cloud capability, how we leverage HIPAA, and how we do all of our interfaces with the DOD. So I will tell you that by doing this process, even though it was a heavy lift for a short period of time, it's created the kind of awareness that you need throughout the organization versus just within a security team. This is an organizational awareness. This is something that everyone in the organization knows that we have to address, and we really have all hands on deck. It's a good story. It really is a good story, and the team is working on the right thing.
What has been the reaction so far from Capitol Hill, from the Veterans Affairs Committee? You've met with them, I know, when you delivered the plan back in September. Mm-hmm. I imagine you've met with them, if not monthly, weekly, maybe biweekly. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that relationship and how you're kind of allaying their fears.
You asked me a question about what the difference is between private and public. Well, that's one. We don't have a political group looking to see if you're doing the right things and oversight. We have stockholders, but a very different kind of relationship. One of the things that we put in place is every 6 weeks, I've been meeting with the Four Corners, which are all the staffers for the SVAC and the HVAC. I think is really important as part of our core four principles, which are to be transparent, accountable, innovative, and show teamwork, that I also leverage that when I'm talking about Capitol Hill. And so every 6 weeks we meet. I've met with the Hackensack as well, so appropriations understand what we do. I take any kinds of questions or meetings that any of the chairs or co-chairs might have or any members of those committees. I think it's very important that they understand what we're doing, how we're going about it, what's our approach, what's our framework. You know, we've leveraged and set out our work in a time frame that's now near and future, and I explain to them why and how this will help us execute. Because one of the key commitments that I made when accepting this role was that I would leave the organization with a framework that they can leverage in its entirety long after I'm out of this office. And I think that was really, really important. When you're thinking about supporting the veteran, as we are, we've got to be focused on continuity. And the team had to really have a framework that would allow them to grow and for them to leverage going forward. And I think we've put that in place. So far, it's been very receptive. They've been very supportive on Capitol Hill, I'm very pleased to say, and engaged. They ask questions. They're the right questions. And I'm happy to say we're always willing to answer them and engage them directly.
And I think one of the things that I've heard from my reporting on Capitol Hill is they are trying to give you some runway. They realize mm-hmm. that you're walking into a tough situation, a lot of challenges, and they don't want to come out so, you know, shaking their finger at you before you've had time to put your mark on the organization. You just testified before the budget. Did you get a pretty good response during the budget hearing? Did cyber come up at all? And then let's just kind of pull on that string a little bit about the budget. What do you, for 2017, you guys are putting requests. Is there specific money dedicated for cyber outside of the big pot of IT money that you guys, it's like $3.4 billion or something like that?
We actually have allocated well over $300 million for cybersecurity, fully funding it, fully resourcing it. That was really important. If we really wanted to show that we were focused on this and that we were serious about it, then I had to make sure that we're fully funded. We are fully funded in 2016 as well. So when we say we're going to eliminate this material weakness, we're prepared to eliminate this material weakness. The budget hearing went well. I was happy to be there with the secretary and the undersecretary for health, as well as other leaders with MVA. I found that the questions were, do you have what you need? And that's been a consistent question. And I appreciate that because it gives me a chance to say, yeah, we have the resources we need, but I need more skills. You know, I need people that understand architecture. I need people to understand data. You know, we got to figure out smart ways to get people to come and want to take on these opportunities in government and help us to really make sure that we're staying abreast of what I call the new by driving real technology in the support of our veterans. So if anything, I feel very confident in how the hearings went, and I'm always open to answering their questions and certainly making sure they know exactly what we're doing. And I think part of the reason maybe some of the questioning has not been as aggressive is because we have set up this every 4 weeks, you know, engagement, and it's very informal. If you want to know something, you know, I'm always happy to engage you.
And I think that's key. I think any new political appointee, no matter what agency, no matter what topic area, in your case IT, but it could be acquisition, it could be management, the communication with the Hill is where that seems to fall apart, and that's where the relationship seems to splinter. So it's obviously, I think it's good to see that you're trying to repair it. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more. My guest is Laverne Council, the Chief Information Officer of the Veterans Affairs Department. I'm Jason Miller, your host, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Laverne Council, the Chief Information Officer for the Veterans Affairs Department. Let's talk about some of your other priorities that you're looking at over the next year or so. Digital services, Agile, Buy First. Take me down maybe the laundry list first of everything you want to get done between now and the end of the year.
Oh, gosh. It's quite a bit. I think everybody's moving as quickly as they can. But clearly, the first area and most important to me is people and training. I like the focus on training at the leadership level and at the individual contributor level. So we will be moving ITIL and rolling ITIL out throughout the organization, as well as Agile training, to really get everyone to understand the true benefits of Agile. And in our case, we've got to move to Enterprise Agile, which is a much more sophisticated way of using Agile. And so getting everyone to that and understanding how that ties with Lean is going to be very interesting and, for me, exciting, because that means that we really are supporting our folks. Secondarily, we're kicking off 101 program management, project management, and support of VIP and what we call our VIPER process. VIPER is how we get a request into the EPMO. VIP is how we really focus it and get it done. And so doing the training and all those areas around there. And then I think the third key thing is really our long-term focus on getting career plans in place for all our employees within OINT. One of the things that I've always felt as a leader and as a core responsibility, regardless if you're an appointee or not an appointee, is you've got to think about the resources, you've got to think about the people, and how you're going to create the capability that they need. So it's one thing for me to say we don't have skills. It's another thing for me not to do anything to get the skills in place. And so to get the skills in place, you've got to put training for it. You got to talk about what the opportunities are. You got to see if there's people that want to step up to those opportunities and close those gaps. And so that's where the career planning really comes in. When I think about the 12 key initiatives, though, within VA, IT is tied to most of them and the delivery of them. And our focus is to engage all of those. I'm ensuring that they're fully funded, fully resourced, fully governed, so that we can, at the end of 2016, fundamentally move forward where we want to with the MyVA initiative. In addition, of course, VIP will be fully in use. We will, at the end of September, have all projects moving in through VIP in preparation for the beginning of fiscal year 2017. Our SD&E area, which is our help desk and all of our field operations, will have gone through its reengineering design, and we clearly have a new help desk in place. Our control center will be up and running, and we'll have a very different look and feel from an IT perspective. Our account managers, which is a huge difference in our collaboration stance, will be in place. And our account managers are really our core collaboration leadership executive with each of the divisions. So there'll be one for VHA, VBA, corporate, NCA. And so their objective is to create that collaboration and partnershiping. But they also own the portfolio. And the really neat thing about this role is that we're also supporting them out in the field, what we're calling customer relationship managers. Those folks will be deployed across the United States, and they will work cross-business. So they will visit VHA locations, VBA locations, NCA locations, and really understand how well we're serving our customers, where our opportunities are, where do we see innovation that we can share across the enterprise, also what needs to be heard at the top of the enterprise versus what's happening in the field. So those roles, by the way, have been highly sought after. We received well over, I think, almost 500 applicants for those five positions because they're what I call cool jobs. So the neat thing about creating new jobs is you create the job that you would love to have, right? And this was one of those jobs. The neat thing about the CRMs and their support of the account managers is they're going to be supported by knowledge management and knowledge managers. Now, this is very new for us in OINT, but it's a standard bearer in how work is done in private industry. And these knowledge managers are basically taking the daily uptick from the customer relationship managers. And, you know, if there's an issue, they're addressing that issue to get it closed out. If there's sharing and information that the account managers need to convey or messages they need to convey, they're creating those messages and getting them to the account manager. So what we're setting up is a very action-oriented communication process, innovation cycle, change management process that the VA has never seen. I'm excited about it. I think it's a great way to be innovative. And it's a great way to leverage our people as well and give people opportunities to come into the VA in a different way.
All right, there's a lot you went through there, so let me back us up
and
for a second.
Not even everything is going to get done.
That's just the highlights. I know we could talk
the
more.
Highlights.
The VIP process, talk a little bit about that and how that's going to replace PMAS and what's the thinking behind that.
Well, let me start with PMAS. And I always like to say this and be clear about it. PMAS provided a process for the organization to understand that in order to provide good solutions, you've got to follow the standard process. I think what happened, which often can happen, is that process becomes laden with artifacts and things that people think they need that they never use. And so this was a great time for us to really take a step back and say, let's go full agile. Let's think about how we really make this a veteran-focused internal process, which is what VIP stands for. In so doing, we've been able to take the number of artifacts that are required in PMAS from 58 to VIP to 7. We also have been able to move to a single release process. We had multiple release processes within the organization. We're now moving to standard 1. And one change calendar. It is true agile, you know, where we're using Scrum, where we're really thinking through how do we break ourselves into phases and how do we do the heavy lift first and move to the true agile processes later as far as cleaning the solution and getting the solution up and running. But it's about shortening the time to delivery and increasing the quality of what's delivered to meet the needs of the customer much more aggressively. So the idea is that, and this was done by the team, by the way. I'd be remiss not to say the team who many of them are developers of PMAS actually created the new solution in VIP. And I think what we have is with these seven steps, we have security in the front, which is important. We now have it increased our span, so we now have planning in the process. And additionally, it adds a 90-day warranty period at the end of the process. So less artifacts, more comprehensive, true agile, one release process, and a clear set of owners that we know what we're delivering, driven by metrics that matter, an 18-month rolling portfolio forecast, and a clear way for us to see ourselves forward. So it'll be a great way for us to message to our business partners, but also message to the veteran population what we're doing on their behalf.
There's been a lot of work your office has been a part of with VHA, VBA, whether it's VBMS or disability claims or vets.gov, mm-hmm. patient scheduling system. Just wondering, can you give us an update starting with the patient scheduling system? I know there was a contract awarded, I want to say August timeframe, to Lockheed Martin or division of Lockheed Martin. And I know that VBMS has also been a popular one. So can you start with patient scheduling?
The mass scheduling process, and many of these were done before my arrival, so I don't want to act like the all expert, but there is a pilot going on with mass and comparative with the KPIs, with the internal process. Because the real question is, you know, can we get where we need to get as quickly as we need to make sure that the veteran has access? That pilot is scheduled to be completed here in the late spring, and then at that point, the business will evaluate those KPIs and decide which way forward is the right way at this point. VBMS is, you know, frankly, is our claims process. We know we want to get that cleared up for our veterans. We know we want the claim process to be faster, much more agile, much more conclusive, and more complete. And there's a number of different factors going on in play. I will tell you from the business partner's point of view, getting the process up and running was half of the battle. Now the other half is refining it and making that process truly agile, and getting it to the point where the veteran knows what we're doing with their product. They know when we're going to have an answer. They have a clear timeline of expectation. And so we're working forward with that.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more. My guest is Laverne Council, the Chief Information Officer of the Veterans Affairs Department. I'm Jason Miller, your host, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My guest today is Laverne Council, the Veterans Affairs Department's Chief Information Officer. In this part of the program, we play an excerpt of a speech Ms. Council gave during a recent FCA Bethesda Health IT Day, where she focused on healthcare data. She also takes questions later on from the audience.
The effect in our activities and what we do and our whole well-being really matters that somehow that information is getting to someone who can put it in a source of understanding to make a difference for us. Now, I don't know about your environments, and I don't know if you actually go to the doctor and tell the truth, like, you know, how many carbs you actually eat or that you have more than that one drink a week that they always ask you about, or that, you know, you might smoke an electronic cigarette or something, or that you don't really ride the bike 5 days a week, you ride it 2 days a week. Whatever it is, it would be beneficial to know. Why? Why do you want to know these things? Not because we're paranoid, but because we have too much information, and that information has made us aware of things. I often think about how I enjoyed food when there were no labels. You remember that? Like red dye number 5 was our friend. Remember that? And now everything I get, I look at the label and I see the carbs and I'm like, ah, that's too many carbs. I love stuff that comes without labels and I just figure it's calorie free. But it's information. Information is tailored how we make decisions, what we think about, but it doesn't tailor the information about the people that care for our health. So when I thought about this gathering and when I thought about the world that I live in, my ideal opportunity would be to be able to talk to our veteran and share with them what they should be thinking about today so they don't have to worry about it. It'd be nice to be able to say to somebody, you're doing fine. You know, I'm not going to tell you you might not just drop off the cliff tomorrow, but what I will tell you right now, you're good. And I think sometimes that just steadies the truth. And for all of us, all we're trying to do is make sure that this interaction is a positive one, that it's the fullest one, and this is where data comes in. But I don't think we're as far away from the truth of being able to have a real conversation with this person as we think. I just don't think we've thought about it beyond what we need. In talking to the business and in talking to folks that use technology, very seldom is the conversation about the patient. It's about me as the clinician, how I want to use the system, what I need in the system. But very seldom is the patient in the system. And does anyone ever think to say, is this what the patient wants? You know, I grew up with a doctor, Dr. Brian. I never forget him. He was one of those doctors that, you know, back before you had specialists. So he birthed me here. He took care of me. He was a general practitioner. He took care of the whole family. That was the coolest thing ever, because he could talk about me as I was growing up. And we could tell, and he could talk about it as I was getting ready to go to college. And his daughters went to school with me. And so he would have some embarrassing conversations with me, because I think he sort of felt like a little bit of a father, a little bit. Those kinds of relationships don't exist anymore. And so the reality of creating that means that you've got to know more about folks and that you've got to work a little differently. And I think this is our opportunity. I think somebody out here, because I don't have time right now, but if you run into a wall, call me. I'll help you keep pushing through, because I'm still looking for it to put on my wrist. But somebody needs to engage in the person and what the person needs. And then give that to that great practitioner with all their professionalism, with all their insight, a way to know that unique individual, that unique set of DNA. So that way we're not talking about the population anymore. We're talking about the person. I'm excited about that, because one of the things I believe is that, you know, our whole objective in life is to live the best life we can. It's not necessarily how long it is. It's not necessarily how rich you are. And for some people, and I love those people, it's not about how skinny you are. It's just about how good you feel and how good you make other people feel and how you can rise above it when other people can't. And how you're not preoccupied by the little stuff because you understand the big stuff. So I think that's the opportunity. I believe data plus technology can make our lives better. I think you have to stop listening to your Fitbit, because it will mislead you. I do believe in the 10,000 steps you're riding, walking, you're making new friends. You're seeing things you haven't seen before. You're seeing plants grow that you haven't even noticed. You're getting some fresh air, whatever we call fresh air. You're enriching your life. Why? Because we all want to do the best we can. This is our opportunity. The technologist and the use of data, when we really put the person in the center, I believe has the best opportunity to do true innovation. Now you might ask, why not? Why hasn't it happened? Why hasn't it happened? I don't know why. Well, I can guess. But there's no good excuse. None. So that's my challenge to you. I was told that there would be people in the room that could do this.
We have a couple of minutes for some questions. Do we have any questions from our audience? Actually, the first hand I saw right over here.
Hi, Tom O'Keefe with Immix Group. We represent a lot of technology manufacturers, and I don't want to take us away from the wonderful message of your keynote, but yeah. There is a real big challenge folks have interacting with the VA sometimes, and particularly the vendor management office. Mm-hmm. And I know when you stepped in, you made one of your goals to sort of change the process or help improve interaction between industry and government. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could talk a bit about that today, some of the avenues that you're trying to open up within the VA to sure. better enable our collaboration.
Sure, and no, you didn't stop my keynote because I did me. you know, the fact is part of our strategy is strategic sourcing. We've got to be better at understanding what everyone in this room does. Who does it better than others, who do it well, who do it the way we need it. And I really see that as part of
Hi, LeBron Quintus
Hi, Brown. How are you? I know who you are.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good.
So in the most recent interoperability panel, we talked about some of the challenges with transmitting data. And once the data is available, the veterans are actually giving consent to use of that data for it to be used effectively. So what strategies are you thinking about to try to encourage and persuade veterans to opt in to make their PHI more available?
That's a good question. In fact, I just had that conversation on a care commission hearing this morning. There's a couple of things. There's a couple of things we already have in place with our e-benefits process. They actually put the data with the veteran through using the two-factor process, so we actually know it was the veteran, and they can actually download their benefits information. We're excited about that because, frankly, it puts it in their hands and they can take it whomever they want to take it to. But the ideal opportunity would be the consent issue is not as big of an issue as you might think. I think most people would give you consent if they knew who they would give you consent for. The reality is most people just don't want to give you consent and have you go send it where you want. They want to give you consent for someone. And, you know, to me, it's the same concept that's been around for 30 years, which is called the lockbox. Anybody remember the lockbox concept? How a lockbox works? It totally will work for that, right? I'm the person looking for the information. We profile and know you. This is the person you want to get the information, and we give them the information. So those are the kind of concepts we're looking to and working with. I think it's also important for people to remember from privacy points of view, you know, mental health data and psychotherapy data is not in that mix. That's a whole different set of rules. And I think it's important that people remember that as well, because they'll ask for those notes, and that's not something you should be sharing.
I'd like to thank my guests today, Laverne Council, the Assistant Secretary for the Office of Information and Technology and Chief Information Officer at the Veterans Affairs Department. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you, Jason. I appreciate the invite, and it was special. Thank you.
And you can hear more from Ms. Council on our Women of Washington show. That will be airing on March 2nd at 1 p.m., where you'll sit down with Aileen Black and Gigi San to talk more personal information, more personal details about your time and coming to Washington. So, again, you've been listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.